Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Tucker Carlson. We all know the name. Is there anything more to know about the man? Anything new to report? Well, the New York Times says yes. Carlson is the subject of a new multi-part series about his rise and his role in the GOP. So what is there to learn? What should all of us know about Carlson and what he represents? Those are a couple of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast, so let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and this weekly podcast is our chance to go more in-depth, talking with media leaders and newsmakers about the story behind the story. And this week, I want to share that behind-the-scenes story of the New York Times new series called American Nationalist. It is a in-depth, frankly long-awaited look at Tucker Carlson, his evolution over the years, his rise at Fox, and what he means to the GOP, and frankly to the United States and to politics. Nicholas Confessori is the New York Times reporter who had been working on this series for months and months. It began to be published last Saturday online, last Sunday in print. There are two long articles and one really interesting interactive that examine Carlson's career. Of course, he was once on CNN, then on MSNBC, but found a home at Fox and became, over the last few years, the biggest star the network has arguably ever seen. Confessori lays it all out with nearly 20,000 words, arguing this may be the most racist show in the history of cable news. And he reveals a lot that, frankly, I didn't know about Carlson. I was kind of coming in with the view that Carlson's been covered all over the place, that there might not be anything more to know. But it turns out there is. So let's get to it. All right, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Brian. Good to be here.
I thought it'd be fun to start with a direct message that I sent you in July of 2021. This was 10 months ago, and you ignored me. I said, I keep hearing about a blockbuster investigation into Tucker Carlson. And you didn't reply. So here's a question, Nick. Were you already working on it back then? Was I right that you were already working on this investigation 10 months ago?
I'm not going to discuss the timeline of the story. I would note that the Washington Post did a piece about Tucker Carlson shortly after you DM'd me, and I wonder if lines were crossed. But certainly this has been a project months in the making that required a lot of work. You can tell that just by looking at it, and it required a lot of thought and care to really think about what story we were trying to find and tell, how to tell it fairly, what was the reporting that we needed to really understand what we were looking at, and getting it and delivering it. That was a long process.
All right. Well, let's let the record show. I believe my tipster was correct. The point is, this is a very important, in-depth, long-term project. And as you said, Nick, readers can tell from going ahead and perusing it firsthand. This article has been out, this package has been out for several days, and to me, there's still a lot of parts that have not been fully dissected and appreciated. And that's what I'm hoping we can dig into here on the podcast. But let's get first things first. Why was it important to you to explore Tucker Carlson now? Because there's already been a lot written about him.
Yeah, and in fact, I'll be honest, when I first got this assignment and was talking about it with editors, I won't say when, I had that reaction. I thought, is there anything new to say about this guy? He's been profiled so many times that a colleague of ours at Politico wrote a column about the art of the Tucker profile. So I felt that there was a really high bar. But one reason we thought it was important was just that there was growing evidence that he was cribbing some of his hottest and highest rating material from really arcane sources on the far right. And I'm not just saying that, Brian, like the far right, like it's anybody to the right of Eric Adams. I mean, like, sites and sources that most normal people who are Republican don't ever visit, like the Daily Stormer or V-Dare. And we wanted to understand, like, is that really what's happening? And if that's happening, why is he doing that? And what's the pipeline there? And what's the purpose of it? And how does it serve Carlson? How does it serve Fox, if it's true? And what does it mean for the country that this incredibly and highly rated television show is piping stuff in from obscure nativist and racist sites?
Mm-hmm. One of my regrets when I was working on this book called Hoax a couple years ago was that Tucker was becoming the number one star on Fox, but I was too focused on the Sean Hannitys and the Laura Ingrams. And Tucker emerged right around 2019, 2020, and then certainly 2021 as the biggest star on the network. What timeline would you provide for that? How would you assess his rise to the point where, you know, he takes over Fox and reshapes Fox?
Well, I would look to the George Floyd protests in the summer of 2020. Right. I believe that's when he dethroned Sean Hannity, who is a longtime TV host who has been around a very long time. He's been successful for a long time. But Hannity really represents an older conservative point of view. And he's not dabbling in the same kind of stuff. You'll always find stories about immigration and Black Lives Matters now on any Fox show. I don't think that was Sean's bag, really. Carlson, right when this country was convulsed by an argument, a really important one, about police brutality and the lives of our Black citizens, Carlson was out there on his show telling his viewers, who were 92% white, that not only was there nothing for them to be upset about or feel bad about, but actually the protesters were the bad guys. And that's a really big and important move, I think, for a lot of people in that audience, because they might be thinking, boy, like, this is pretty bad. And in fact, you saw a lot of sympathy at first in polls for Black Lives Matter protests, because I think anybody would say, yeah, like a person pulled over for a broken traffic light probably shouldn't end up, you know, dead on the pavement. Carlson really took that and just pivoted it, which is something he often does. He just inverted the entire narrative. He said, actually, it's the people who are out saying that maybe someone pulled over for a traffic light shouldn't end up dead who are actually trying to destroy America. And that's like his language. He says that all the time. And it didn't really, I didn't really understand, because I don't watch a lot of television, to be honest, until I really immersed myself in the show. I didn't really understand how apocalyptic and direct and dark his rhetoric is. And I think I saw, Brian, something you wrote once as I was reporting this out about the difference between O'Reilly, who is the former inhabitant of that time slot, the 8 o'clock Fox time slot, and Carlson. And I think you said something like, you know, O'Reilly said, who's looking out for you? It's me. And Carlson says, who's looking out for you? No one.
Wow, you just nailed my quote. Thank you.
It was a really good insight.
That is the key difference between what was 20 years of Fox News, which was, you know, Bill O'Reilly taking care of the folks, versus Tucker's apocalyptic worldview. And what I appreciate, Nick, about your series is you take his words seriously. You know, so much of the commentary around Fox and Tucker is, you know, laughing about him, making fun of him, ridiculing him. You know, liberals on Twitter like to share clips of him and dunk on Tucker Carlson. But if you watch it as a Fox viewer, you start to appreciate just how dark and how it's gotten. And as you said in the piece, gotten darker over the years. So how did you all track this? You all actually tried to measure it.
I'm lucky to work with some really talented people, and many of them jumped in on this project for the all-important work of literally watching or reading transcripts of every single episode of Tucker Carlson Tonight through the end of last year. There was a big team on our graphics desk, which isn't what it sounds like. It's people who do data reporting and graphics and coding, lots of different talents. But basically, we pored over the show and we categorized every segment, every episode. We categorized what language he used and how often he used it, which topics he turned to. And we found two things that are really important. First, this whole controversy over replacement theory, which kind of pierced the bubble of broader consciousness last spring when he actually defended the idea as such. And I'll get back to that. That wasn't even close to the first time he's talked about this replacement theory, which is essentially an import from white nationalists who believe that a cabal of Jewish elites are conspiring to destroy white people. You know, on his show, Carlson does a version of that, but he has for years. And what we found is that if you go back, when he gets the 8 p.m. slot on Fox, and he's trying to figure out how to differentiate himself from Sean Hannity, who's going to do the Trump hour every night, and it's going to be very Washington-focused. Lots of Nancy Pelosi and Bob Mueller eventually. He realizes, well, I got to get that same audience, but I got to come at it a different way. Hmm. And what you see after that moment on the show is more and more of this replacement theory by one form or another. It goes all the way back to the summer of 2017 is when it really picks up.
And that is a key insight because, as I said, there will be this kind of Twitter reaction to Tucker Carlson every once in a while, sometimes caused by a researcher at Media Matters or some other liberal group. And there will be this pile on about a specific moment on the show. But the actual impact of a show like Tucker Carlson Tonight is in the daily repetition. What is that old saying about op-ed columns? Like, there's no reason to ever write a great op-ed once. You got to write it over and over and over again. That's what Tucker does. He writes it over and over and over again. And if you don't watch, you don't realize the impact of the repetition.
I think the power of his show is first in his undeniable talent as a broadcaster. I think there are very few people in the industry who have his intelligence and fluidity and a really solid sense of worldview and argument. Every night when you tune to that show, you are hearing chapters in one long story. And it's a very specific story. And as my colleagues on the graphics desk showed in the interactive, which all of your listeners should definitely check out, he repeats the same sentences, the same words, the same lines, the same attack lines over and over and over again. He's not just coming on to talk about the day's news and make sense of it in the way that most hosts on the left and the right tend to do. He is incorporating whatever happens into his narrative. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's the invasion of Ukraine or someone who wants to legalize pot, or a liberal lawmaker who has a bodyguard, everything comes back to the central narrative of elite corruption, elite hatred, how much the elite, the ruling class, hates you over and over and over again.
And of course, he comes from an elite background. So let's talk about that part of your piece. I think there are some details, some paragraphs, some parts of your reporting that that have been a little bit underappreciated this week. One is about Carlson's mother. And I should have known this. I did not know this background about his mom essentially abandoning the family. Or you tell us. Tell us why his mother and his upbringing in that way is relevant.
Well, so I have been hearing about this from his friends in the early months of my reporting.
Let me just check on that. His friends talked to you?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of them have mixed feelings about the show and about their relationship with him. But I think there was an interest in trying to really understand the guy. And I know he won't believe that. He won't see it that way.
But I believe it.
I think he's a really important figure. And that's why we spent so many thousands of words on him. And so you ask, what happened? Well, when he was six or seven, his parents split up and they had what actually was a pretty ugly divorce in California. if you look at court records, the story they tell is much like the story that he has told in recent years. And I'll come back to that, that his mother was a drug abuser and was ill. He even told Adam Carolla a couple of years ago on an interview on Carolla's show that his mother had made him and his brother do drugs. And then
he went on to say, quote, when you realize your own mother doesn't like you, when she says that, it's like, oh, gosh. And that Carlson felt all kinds of rage about it. So are you trying to point to what happened to him as a kid to explain his behavior now?
Well, you know, when I first started hearing about this and I wondered, well, I don't want to psychoanalyze the guy. And you don't want to do that as a reporter. And then I noticed that in the interview with Adam Carolla, and then recently, actually, in a couple of interviews with Megyn Kelly, Dave Rubin, others, that Tucker has actually talked about this quite a lot. And I realized I wasn't imagining it. This is actually the story he tells.
It's coming from him.
It's coming from him. And I thought, well, so now we know. I don't have to guess. And this is important. And the conclusion that you have to draw, if you take him at his word on this, was that his mother's departure had a role in his drinking when he was younger. He's dry now. He quit drinking. He was a big drinker in his day. He talks about that a lot. And that he was, you know, as you were saying, he felt a lot of rage about it. And we've all seen that. We all have friends who had parents who were divorced, who felt abandoned or at fault, who had to work through that in different ways. And I think Carlson, you know, by his own words, would say he's worked through that. But it's interesting to think of how he's worked through it and what he's said about how he's worked through it. One way, as he said, is he got married pretty young, and he strove to have a really great family life. And everyone who knows him will tell you that if the only people he ever hung out with were his kids and his wife, he'd probably be okay with it. He loves his family. He's deeply loyal to them. But he also took this lesson. And I think he was very wounded by his mother leaving. And the lesson he took, according to what he told Megyn Kelly, he says, essentially, criticism from people who hate me doesn't mean anything to me. And I'm not letting them in my head. And he said to a different interviewer, you should only care about the opinions of people who care about you. And that really, really struck me, Brian. And, you know, it's up to him whose opinions he wants to listen to. And on some level, I really do sympathize with, you know, kind of any of us trying to be clear-headed about what we believe and what's important to us. And in the modern media environment, you could spend all day looking at tweets of people who hate you and have never met you and are engaging with, you know, my case, with your reporting.
What you say about Tucker and his family, I think a lot of us feel that way, right? If we could just hang out with our family and hang out with the kids, it's all good. He is fiercely loyal to his family. That's true. And I'm sure he believes. Well, here's a related question then. Does he actually think what he's doing is to help the future of the country for his kids?
Well, you know, there are some other breadcrumbs in his early life, in his mid-career. You know, and I listened to almost every interview he's given that's on tape, and I read a lot more. And, you know, as a reporter, it's always interesting what you find if you just read everything, just get into the clips and read everything. And he talks about, like, feeling hard up for money, having four kids and being a sole breadwinner, being fired from MSNBC at the dawn of the Obama era, feeling like a punchline. There was a story that I read, a clip in the New Republic that actually, like, talked about how Tucker was a punchline in Washington when he launched the Daily Caller, that he was like someone who nobody would want their career compared to, which is like a crazy thing to think about now. Right.
Right. But it relates to the bow tie thing, like being mocked for the bow tie. It's absolutely true that his career was a punchline, or at least a cautionary tale.
Yeah, at the time. And so when you ask, like, what does he believe? I believe he genuinely has become a paleo conservative. That's pretty obvious. And what we found in our reporting is you can find evidence of that going back to his first days on Crossfire on CNN in the early Bush administration. He was already, within a couple of years, and I can't tell you exactly why, I have some well-informed theories, but within a couple of years, he's become increasingly skeptical of immigration. But for many years, that skepticism was within like the normal range of opinion and how you would talk about immigration that like was fairly conventional for the right, for mainstream conservative circles. But by 2008, he's on MSNBC and he's saying, well, of course we're having an invasion of the southern border. Of course it's an invasion. What's wrong with saying so? And you can begin to see the seeds of him going even farther and seeing, you know, border policy as the culmination of a grand conspiracy by elite, you know, cabals of both parties.
I love how you portray him mocking Pat Buchanan years ago and then becoming a version of Pat Buchanan. And I wonder if there's a version of that that happens to lots of people, where you at least find common cause, as you put it, with the folks that you were ridiculing. And Nick, spending so much time watching, listening to Carlson's program, his rhetoric about immigration, his rhetoric about the working class, about people left behind, does it hold together? I mean, you're right. He does tell a story every day. It's all part of a larger story. Does the story like actually make sense? Is it fact checkable? And does it actually work as a fact checked story?
It's fact checkable. And what I was finding was that almost any time I fact checked any portion of his show on any given day, I would start to just find things that were just totally exaggerated and wrong or misleading. Like, pick your day. But the most important one is his central claim is that the great scourge of the American working class and America in generally is unchecked immigration. Every social ill, it seems, working class unemployment, but also rising home prices, people having babies without being married, you know, litter at his Beltway fishing spots. I mean, almost anything is about immigration. And so looking at that more narrowly, all right, what's the impact of immigration on the white working class? And fundamentally, his thesis is totally wrong. And where it's not totally wrong, it's vastly overstated. I'll give you one example. He is really obsessed with Somali immigrants in the town of Lewiston, Maine. It's an old mill city in Maine. And like a lot of mill cities in the Northeast, it's not as big or as thriving as it used to be back in the heyday. And in the early 2000s, some agencies started to settle refugees from Somali in America. And some of them started in Atlanta, thought there was too much crime, and moved to Portland and then to Lewiston, where there was cheap housing because it was empty because people had moved out. And in Carlson's telling, right, places like Lewiston, Maine, and Lowell, Massachusetts, or any place where large numbers of immigrants have moved into a poor community, it's become poorer. And he just states that as fact. He lectures guests all the time about this. And it's not. I talked to Maine's Labor Department. I said, all right, so what's the evidence here? And they said, basically, the unemployment rate in Lewiston is about the same as the rest of the state. It tracks with the rest of the state. When it rises in Maine, it rises in Lewiston. When it drops in Maine, it drops in Lewiston. There hasn't been a huge economic boom in Lewiston since the Somalis arrived, but there hasn't been like a, you know, a drop in the economy. They've basically had about the same number of jobs since the end of the high industrial era when it was a mill town. And so what's funny about that is it's basically what the economic literature would predict. Mm-hmm. When you get immigrants coming in, they compete for some jobs. Yes, they also create new ones. They create demand for labor, also demand for goods and services. And over time, it tends to net out. The bigger picture, Brian, and he would say, well, how about the, you know, the working class? And basically here, again, like it's just nothing like what he talks about. And none of the expert sources and economists who are closest to his view would ever talk about immigration the way he does on his show. In general, and if you look at some analyses from the National Academies of Sciences, some others, what they find is that when you do the complex economic research on the previous wave of low-skill, high immigration, which was when Tucker was coming up as a magazine writer in the 1990s, which was a really hot, like a high period for illegal immigration. There are some studies that see some meaningful effects on one particular category of the working class, high school dropouts. There are also other studies that show small to zero effects. So it's hard to figure out. When you look more broadly at the working class, there is just not a ton of evidence that immigration is responsible for all their problems. And in fact, if Tucker Carlson, I think, you know, genuinely cared about working class people in America as much as he talks about on the show, you would probably hear a lot more on the show about the declining value of the minimum wage, about unions, about all the other factors that are perhaps less high wattage for ratings that play a role in what's happening to the working class in this country. But you're not going to have the top rated show on Fox if every night you talk about raising the minimum wage a little bit. And you're not going to have the top rated show if you talk a lot about being in unions, unless you're getting in a bank shot at Jeff Bezos by talking about the Amazon success for unions. So again, the fundamental argument is basically wrong.
And Carlson is one of the only figures on national TV talking about some of these topics. But if he's talking about them all wrong, he's actually just he's setting people back, not helping them move forward.
Look, if I could get one point across to liberal readers of these stories and in your audience who don't watch Fox, who are only aware of what happens on there from clips they see tweeted out by liberal influencers on Twitter, it is this. You can't think of Tucker's show and Fox as occasionally he goes over the line and they have to reel him back in. Working the line is the point. That's the show. Looking for that edge, provoking, courting blowback. They love it when people call for him to be canceled. That's material for them. And you've seen it, Brian, right? You've seen how Fox and Friends will come back the next day and get a second bite at the apple with a discussion about how everyone wants to, you know, cancel this show or that show or is mad about a segment from primetime. And then when they're really lucky, the primetime crew gets their own second bite, a third bite at the apple, where they mock the people who were so incensed by the segment the previous night. And what the audience hears is, ah, this is forbidden knowledge. Somebody's trying to stop me from hearing that. I better listen some more. And I sure feel loyal to this network that has the guts to not bow down. It is all a programming strategy.
Yes, I only trust Fox. I can only trust Fox. Stick with Fox. Don't turn the channel. Gosh, that's cynical. On that note, quick break. More here on the Reliable Sources podcast in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon... and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, speaking with Nick Confessori about his multi-part series looking into Tucker Carlson and his influence on Fox and the GOP. So if you look up an article on townhall.com, you will read Fox's talking points against this story. Of course, not officially, not on the record, but it's pretty clear that Fox had some complaints about your story. One is that you are a commentator on MSNBC, not commentator. You're a contributor to MSNBC. What does that mean? You're a paid analyst on MSNBC. So you're on a different cable news channel. Did that matter? Did that affect your reporting at all, Nick?
Absolutely not. It's, look, sometimes if the law's on your side, you pound the law. If the facts are on your side, you pound the facts. If neither is on your side, you pound the table, right?
Fox has definitely been pounding the table about your piece. Yes.
I have no discussions with MSNBC about reporting I'm about to do or in the progress of doing for MSNBC. They are kind enough to invite me on occasionally to talk about the day's news or a story if I have one. And that's it. There's no role in any of the stuff that we do or publish.
Yeah, that was one of the main, these are basically leaks, right? So like one of the leaked arguments from the Fox camp was that. But what I thought was more interesting were the statements that Fox provided to you for your story. And then Fox circulated those to other reporters so we could see them, wide and far. There were two statements. Tell me if I'm wrong. There were two different statements you were given, right? One from Fox and one from Tucker's producer. Is that right?
Correct.
I thought these were so interesting. And tell me if you think I'm interpreting these the right way. Fox puts out a statement saying, not mentioning Tucker at all, basically saying, Fox News Media is great. We invest in journalism. We are thriving on 8 different platforms. We've doubled our audience. I'm paraphrasing all these different parts of the quotes. Our competitors are losing. We're winning. We're proud of our entire team. And they don't mention Tucker once. Now, I don't know if that's because of certain questions you asked in certain ways, but it seems to me they were trying to put some distance between the Fox brand writ large and their biggest star, Tucker Carlson.
You know, I can't speculate about motives, and you're a much more sophisticated analyst of Fox PR statements than I am. But, you know, I think that there is a bit of schizophrenia there, certainly. That's probably too strong a word. I guess I would say when the New York Times comes to you and says, here we have hundreds of examples of your top-rated show borrowing very clearly material from random white nationalist websites, and it's also your most popular show, what does that mean to you?
What does that mean?
Does that bother you? And like, I guess in that context, you either say, no, it's not white nationalist stuff, which is not what the statements say. although I think the statement from his producer says they're proud of airing different points of view, which is certainly one way to put it. And yet we're on top, we're winning. And maybe that's what matters the most. Maybe it's
look at the scoreboard.
Answer.
Right.
Yeah.
Scoreboard is the ultimate Fox answer. But they seem to like have two lanes here. There's a Fox lane where they say we're proud of our journalism, we're winning. Then there's a Tucker lane where Justin Wells, the senior VP for Tucker Carlson Tonight and the VP of Tucker's digital shows, says, quote, Tucker Carlson programming embraces diversity of thought and presents various points of view in an industry where contrarian thought and the search for truth are often ignored. He goes on to say stories that we broadcast undergo a rigorous editorial process. We're also proud of our ongoing original reporting at a time when most in the media amplify only one point of view. So there's a lot of interesting phrases in there. Original reporting, right? Various points of view, diversity of thought. I don't know if that's if they believe that, but that's how they want to portray Tucker's programming to the outside world, to the New York Times audience.
Well, I would just direct you to one line in our story, which says that Carlson and his team are basically exempt from media relations at Fox. And
I wondered what you meant by that. What did that mean?
People who have read your book, you know, understand that over the long history of Fox, that certainly there have been times when media relations was a pretty fearsome unit within Fox. They were part of the machinery for Roger Ailes to keep talent in line. And so the fact that they're top talent doesn't really have to, you know, be accountable to them is, I think, striking. And perhaps there's one answer to what you're seeing in those two different statements, one from Team Tucker and one from Team Fox, as though they're not necessarily exactly the same thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to get at. I thought it was a really interesting parallel track sort of approach. Two statements, two different sides. So I get the sense Carlson did not comment officially for your article. Lots of us have been yelled at, cursed at by him in the past. Is there anything you can say about your experience trying to get him to comment or engage?
We went to them with what I think and my editors think is the appropriate amount of advance notice. They had several days to engage with our material, to provide a response. We asked for an interview with Carlson. We were told no through the company. He did respond in a certain sense when he had the questions in hand. He went on the air and said, and he looked a little wan. He seemed very angry and upset with our questions. And he said something about how I'm not the kind of person you'd want to have dinner with, which I guess is a matter of opinion, but it's an opinion show. And said it wasn't really about me, the reporter. It was really about the Times trying to cancel anybody who didn't agree with them. And then when the stories came out, I think he tweeted a picture of him holding up a copy. Of course, we're always happy to have someone buy a copy of the paper.
the print paper, yes.
And then I saw what I took to be his second try at putting on a public face about this, which was that he didn't care. So, you know, whether you believe the Tucker Carlson of last Thursday, when he seemed to care a lot and be very exercised and upset, or if you believe the Tucker Carlson that we saw on Twitter last weekend when he's laughing it off, that's really up to you. But it does say something to me about how flexible the truth is here.
You end your second half with the quote from his program about propaganda, saying propaganda tends to bewilder people. It confuses them. It's so obviously untrue. And yet for that very reason, Carlson said, because it's so ridiculous, so absurd, propaganda tends to be effective. Why'd you end with that quote?
It was not the first time, and it won't be the last time, that in listening to Carlson talk about the people he hates and want his audience to hate, that it seemed to me that he was talking about himself.
Nick Confessori, thank you so much for the conversation.
It's my pleasure, Brian.
And that's a wrap here on this week's edition of the Reliable Sources podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you on television this Sunday and every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on CNN. Thanks for tuning in.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.